Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Portraiture, an enduring craft, today on Advanced. Hello, everyone. Welcome to today's Advanced Studio Classroom program. Today is January 10th, and we are continuing our art article that we started yesterday. This article is entitled, Would You Like Your Portrait Painted? And I'm Linda, your host, and back in the studio with me is Peter. Hello, Peter.
Hi, Linda. Hello, everyone. Nice to be back.
So yesterday we talked about how hand-painted portraits have been coming back. It's this quieter trend, something that is not being broadcast on social media or the internet because it's happening offline. And yesterday Peter asked you when we opened up if you liked your picture being taken, and you said you did. But have you ever tried drawing or painting humans or people?
I tried maybe some years ago when I was about 7 or 8 years old, and it was the activity we were doing that day in school during art period or whatever. I just have no drawing ability whatsoever.
It is pretty hard to draw human features, especially hands. I always found that difficult. But drawing humans in general, I think, is difficult. Drawing or painting, I've tried painting humans too, and they just, I need to make it abstract, then it will be more acceptable. Because it doesn't have to be perfect. It doesn't have to be anatomically correct if it's an abstract painting.
You know, right, it's just
kind of has to look like a person.
Now, see, that's what I was saying yesterday, though, is that to me, that, for me personally, that would be the more interesting portrait to have done, is something more, less realistic, less representational, something that doesn't necessarily look exactly like I look in a photograph, but something, how the artist sees me sort of in an abstract sense, because that's something that is unique, not just to me, but to the artist as well.
Right.
And that would, that for me, that would be the more interesting one. But I could not do that for someone else, at least. I could do it maybe by accident in trying to paint them realistically. It would end up looking like an abstract picture. But yeah, I just lack a certain, you know, sense of how to recreate depth and
Well, it's something that you do have to, so it is a skill, like if you want it correct, like with the right dimensions and the right proportions, but you also have to have like an artistic sense in doing art. But something you mentioned about the artist in their rendering of their subject and painting their subject, they do add in their perspective. Like every artist will paint you differently or draw you differently because they see you differently.
Exactly. Yeah.
And we've been talking about portraiture, and for the most part, people do want to look like, they want their portrait to look like them because they're paying to get their portrait done, and it's not cheap. They're paying a significant amount to have this portrait that will probably be hung in their house or an office or somewhere where it can be admired.
Possibly for generations.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's also for their legacy to pass on to future generations. And this is how future generations will see them. And so you obviously want a portrait that will be, that will flatter you and most likely be an idealistic image of yourself.
Yeah, something by Rembrandt or, you know, Renoir, the great European portraitist.
Yeah, something that will be also nice to look at. You don't want a portrait that's, you know, your future family members will want to put in the attic or put in the basement and hide because it's not nice to look at. Okay. So is there anything from yesterday that stood out to you?
Mm. Well, yeah, just this idea of portraits being, to use a phrase from yesterday, portraits, the author says, have always been seen as a mirror to society.
Mm-hmm.
And that you can, because it's not something you immediately think of when you look at a portrait. When you go to a museum and look at famous portraits by famous artists, you think, okay, the artist is obviously very skilled, but all that's telling me is what this person looked like. No. If you look more closely at a portrait, you can learn things about the society. It is very much a mirror to society.
Exactly.
You can get a sense of that society's fashion sense,
mm-hmm.
you know, what kind of clothes they like to wear. What they thought was a noble expression, a virtuous expression to have on their face when they're having their portraits painted. You know, you look at those Rembrandt paintings and almost none of them are, you know, the subject has their tongue stuck out and their eyes open wide or something.
Mm-hmm.
They're always very
mm-hmm.
reserved, dignified. They have depth, but it tells you something about the society.
Yeah,
and I think that's true of any era.
Yes. It is very, very representative of that time, of that era. And we will explore this more in our article today. So let's hear our first reading now. An enduring craft. Over the past few decades, the art of portraiture has become more accessible. Francis Bell, an RP member who has been painting portraits for over 20 years, says her clientele now includes newlyweds, young professionals, and parents wanting to leave behind a tangible heirloom. Institutional portraits of CEOs, lawyers, chancellors, and the like still account for a big portion of the market. That portraiture remains popular is both a rejection of the zeitgeist and, paradoxically, a natural extension of it. It is a slow process that can take countless hours over many sittings, and that is precisely why it is appealing. Everyone interviewed emphasized the intimacy of the sitting process. Two people breathing the same air, in the same room, and looking at each other for hours. You're there with your model, and it's like a triangular conversation, where the third point of the triangle is the thing you're making, says Anthony Connolly, president of the Royal Society of Portrait Painters. The connection goes both ways. For the painter, it's an act of seeing. For the sitter, it's an act of being seen. It's a bonding experience, an art form that no algorithm can ever replicate. Okay, we mentioned this yesterday. Before, portraiture was very exclusive. It was for the elite, the people like the royal family. That is who the Royal Society of Portrait Painters would paint before, exclusively the royal family or people in high society, notable figures. But over the past few decades, the art of portraiture has become more accessible. It's not as exclusive anymore. So Frances Bell is an RP painter, and she's been painting portraits for over 20 years, more than 20 years. And who does her clientele include now?
Right. As you say, it's no longer the King and Queen of England, as it were. It includes newlyweds, people have just gotten married, young professionals, lawyers, bankers, teachers probably, parents wanting to leave behind a tangible heirloom, nice English word there. Heirloom means a valuable object of some kind that has been owned by a family, has been in the family for many years, and is passed down from the older members to the younger members of the family with every sort of generation of family, like a painting,
mm-hmm.
a portrait painting, or like a piece of jewelry,
mm-hmm.
or
yeah,
a dress
jewelry
of some sort. You know, it's a family heirloom.
Yeah.
And so in all these ways, it goes on to say, CEOs, heads of industry, lawyers, chancellors, chancellors, basically a senior state or legal official of some sort. But in addition, newlyweds, young professionals, and parents, the whole market has become more accessible.
Right. And it's because they want to leave something for future generations, an heirloom, something that is tangible, something that you can touch. Yes. And we saw this word yesterday when it referred to our need for tangible human connection. So portraiture provides that because it's something that you can see and touch and have in real life. It's not virtual.
Right. Like, they don't want to just leave a thumb drive to their grandchildren.
Exactly. Yeah. This is something that they can hang in their living room or hang somewhere, not put in the attic or the basement, but for their legacy. And of course, still leaders, government officials, people who are in positions of leadership are still a big portion of their clientele. But we have these people who now, just ordinary people who weren't part of that clientele, now they are getting their portraits done.
Ordinary people with disposable incomes,
exactly.
As we learned yesterday.
Yes, there's always that that requirement.
It hasn't yet trickled down to auto mechanics and, you know, janitors and
stuff. That is something that you really want and that you save money.
Oh, sure. No.
Specifically to do that.
It's all about the bucks. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's not something that is regularly done by blue-collar workers. But portraiture remains popular. That portraiture remains popular is both a rejection of the zeitgeist and paradoxically a natural extension of it. So let's break this sentence down
because
it's saying a lot. It is saying that it's both a rejection and a natural extension of the zeitgeist. So this contradiction, okay. First of all, what is zeitgeist?
Right. Zeitgeist is an English word from German originally.
Mm-hmm,
the spirit of the age. Geist meaning spirit. The zeitgeist is the feeling, the cultural, the societal feeling of a certain age, like a positive feeling in the United States, just because I'm more familiar with that history, in the 1920s. The zeitgeist, World War I was over, the stock market was booming, there was a lot of optimism in the country, everyone was making more money. It would be replaced by a different zeitgeist in the 1930s in the United States, after the stock market had crashed and they were going through the Great Depression, and that produced a different zeitgeist,
right.
A more sober, a more conservative feeling. So a zeitgeist is like the national mood of a society, of a people.
Right. So it reflects the ideas, the beliefs, the outlook, the taste of that particular time in history.
Right.
And so that portraiture remains popular is a rejection, you know, of our current zeitgeist.
Where everyone's getting it through AI.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, because remember, all the time here, we're talking about hand-painted portraiture, not portraiture in general, but particularly hand-painted portraiture. The article began yesterday by saying that 2 years ago, everyone was getting an AI portrait of themselves done, but that at the same time as that was happening, still hand-painted portraiture is increasing as well.
Right, so it's this rejection of like, no, I don't want an AI image of myself. I want a portrait done by a real human painting. And at the same time, it's an extension of the zeitgeist. And how is that?
Right, right. Well, it's an extension of the zeitgeist because we still have people making money. We still have people who are of high status and want to pass on something to their children. In a way, I'm not sure that's part of the zeitgeist because, or we wouldn't describe that desire to pass something on to your children or to just have your status recognized. That's something that's been true of almost every human society since we've had human society. So I'm actually a little uncertain of how hand-painted portraiture is a natural extension of the zeitgeist. It seems to be more a rejection of it. What do you think?
Well, I mean, like you said, it is human nature to want to leave a legacy and to want, like, these images that we are constantly taking of ourselves and of each other, like we need it to document every moment of our lives. So that's how it would be a natural extension of the zeitgeist.
Mm.
So it goes on to say that
it is a slow process and it can take countless hours over many sittings And that is precisely why it is appealing.
Yes.
So another interesting thought here is that the, you know, we're so used to in this age of AI and, you know, going to ChatGPT and having it spit back something that would take us an hour to do. Nevertheless, for hand-painted portraits, which must take many, many hours, you can't just get it from ChatGPT in a few seconds, but that is part of its appeal. That is part of why people are drawn to it, because of the length the process takes.
Yes, and feeding that need for the tangible human connection that we desire. So everyone interviewed emphasized the intimacy of the sitting process, this process that takes countless hours. And the two people sitting there, breathing the same air in the same room, looking at each other for hours. So, and this is the rejection of the current immediacy. Like, I need it now, like instantaneously. This is something that is very intentional. Like, you have to sit there in the room with your portrait painter and look at each other for hours. That's not something that we have a custom of doing these days. Like, we just, okay, it's in, out, you know? There's not that much human connection involved. So.
Yeah, I'm reminded of that famous scene in the movie Titanic when Jack Dawson paints Kate
Winslet.
Yeah, that's right. Paints her portrait. And it's a very romantic encounter. It's a very intimate encounter between the two of them because of the length, because Jack can't just go to his phone, press a few buttons and say, hey, look, it's you.
Right.
And in 10 seconds, the experience is over and they've moved on to something else. They sit in that moment. And the filmmaker knows that too. And he draws us into that moment and helps us watch these two people falling in love with each other.
Right. And we have a quote from the president of the Royal Society of Portrait Painters. You're there with your model, and it's like a triangular conversation where the third point of the triangle is the thing that you're making, is the portrait. So it's this conversation going on. It might be a silent conversation, but it's still going on, and there is human connection. So the connection goes both ways. For the painter, it's an act of seeing, and for the sitter, it's an act of being seen. It's a bonding experience. That what?
It's a bonding experience that no algorithm can ever replicate. Replicate meaning to reproduce or to copy in some way. No algorithm can produce this bonding experience.
AI cannot reproduce this, right? Because it is human to human interaction.
Exactly.
Which is what people want, what people are desiring instead of artificial intelligence, something that's artificial. So let us hear our final reading for today. A Portrait, a Partnership. Claudia Fisher, an American who moved to the UK around the beginning of the pandemic, was not allowed to divulge the cost of her painting. Having never owned a piece of art before, the cost was one giant gulp, she says. But she has no regrets. After a multifaceted career as an opera singer and a classical architecture designer, she turned to fashion and runs a label called Belle Brummel, which makes luxury jackets inspired by 18th and 19th century British couture. Fisher wanted her portrait to act as a marketing tool for her designs. I've always loved the idea of getting a portrait done because I had vision of myself being in a gorgeous dress, she says. It wasn't about immortalizing me. I just wanted a pretty dress. So we meet Claudia Fisher. She's an American who moved to the UK around the beginning of the pandemic, and she had her portrait done at RP. And what was she not allowed to do?
She was not allowed to divulge the cost of her painting. A nice English word there. Divulge, meaning to give someone, to share information that should be secret.
Mm-hmm.
If you ask someone, what's your phone number? And they're happy to give it to you. You wouldn't say that I divulged my phone number to the person.
But you might divulge the phone number of your friend who is very private, or
exactly. Exactly.
You know, she doesn't want her number shared with anyone.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. It's usually something that you want to keep secret.
Yeah.
And so that means that it was pretty expensive if she was not allowed to reveal how much it cost. And she describes the cost as being one giant gulp, right?
Yes.
Like when you take a gulp, it's
exactly.
That. It's that action of swallowing, but it's a big swallow, and it usually means that you're surprised by something or something is shocking. And so this cost, this price was pretty shocking, right?
Yes, yes,
to get
one
over.
Giant gulp. That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, it is an example of onomatopoeia, which are
yes.
words that represent the sound of, you know, the
right.
a particular sound. So
gulp.
Yes, so it like actually sounds like the motion of taking a big swallow. Okay, so she doesn't have any regrets. She is very happy with her portrait. It just, you know, it took some time probably to get over that price. But she is very accomplished. She's had a multifaceted career. That word we see multi, many, facet, side, so many-sided or many, something that has many parts. So she's had different parts of her career. She's been an opera singer, she's been a classical architecture designer, and now she runs a fashion label, right? And it is probably named after someone in history because she actually makes luxury jackets inspired by 18th and 19th century British couture. And there's someone by that name that probably inspired the name of her label.
Right, yes. Beau Brummel, a man who lived in the 18th century in England and was considered to be very wise and smart in the ways of men's fashion, what we might call an arbiter of men's fashion, a taste maker. He was, and forever after, to use the name Beau Brummel is to say, oh, have you seen that new suit that Peter got? It is Beau Brummel. It is the height of fashion. It looks very good on him, very stylish, because that was the kind of man Beau Brummel was. And so Claudia Fisher, with a sense of wit here, is calling her fashion label Belle Brummel. Belle, the French word for lady or woman.
Right. And it is an example of, or what she's fashioned her label on is an example of British couture. And couture is obviously a French word, represents the high fashion, very fashionable, expensive taste. Also, couture is the custom-made clothing industry. So if you have something that is couture, it's been custom-made for you.
Right. You won't find her jackets in Uniqlo.
Right. Yeah, which is mass-produced. All right. So Fisher wanted her portrait to act as a marketing tool for her designs, right? So she had a purpose behind getting her portrait done. She also loved the idea of getting a portrait done because she had always had a vision of herself in a gorgeous dress. So this was an opportunity to get dressed up in a beautiful dress and getting her portrait painted. So for her, it wasn't about immortalizing herself. She just wanted a pretty dress.
Right. It wasn't that she wanted to create this thing that she would pass down to generations after her so that in a way it was like she didn't die. It was like she was immortal, mortal meaning death or capable of dying, and immortal, obviously the negative of that. She just wanted a picture of herself in a pretty dress.
Yeah, yeah. But it could also serve the purpose of immortalizing her as well.
Right.
And this is something she can pass on.
If she changes her mind.
Yeah, to future generations, it's still like her image has been captured in this portrait, and it will be forever that way until the portrait is no longer there.
Right. And you can see in the image there on the page that she is actually wearing one of the jackets from her fashion label,
mm-hmm.
Belle Brummel.
Yes. And she talked about the price. The average price for a portrait is $13,000 to $20,000.
At the Royal Society.
Yes, at the Royal Society.
You can go down the street to Jack's Portraits and get it done for maybe $500, but it might not look as good.
Right. So you can get it as inexpensive, quote unquote, as $6,000 if you just get a head and shoulders, like a portrait, but it can be as expensive as $130,000.
Right. Over at Jack, they'll give you two eyes and your nose for $200.
Yeah. So is this something that, okay, price aside, is this something that you would consider doing?
I would. Sure, sure. But again, I think for myself, I know what I look like. I can, if I want my descendants to know what I look like, I can leave them photographs. I would be, if I was going to spend this kind of money, I would be much more interested in having a more interpretive or abstract portrait painted of myself rather than the straightforward kind that we see here. Nothing against those, but just, again, if I'm spending that kind of money, I'd like to see how an interesting artistic person sees me rather than just sort of a glorified photograph, to be honest.
Right, yeah. I think I would want to leave a legacy, like either through a foundation or having a fund named after me so that my legacy could continue, not necessarily within a portrait. But it is a nice idea. If I had just tons of disposable income, I might consider getting my portrait done.
Or a pretty dress.
Just for the fun of it, yeah, in wearing a gorgeous dress. Well, that is all the time that we have for today. Thank you for joining us in discussing our art article. Join us next time for the next Advanced Studio program. And we hope that you enjoyed this. For now, I'm Linda.
I'm Peter.
Saying goodbye.
Bye-bye.